on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Good morning. Welcome aboard The Adventures of the Shipwrecked Fisherman. Coming up next. Love it when people have adventures. I love it when people have adventures, but also when they have adventures in their backyard. I mean, it's all well and good to be Richard Branson and be able to build a rocket ship and go to space. But what about people who have really great adventures in their own backyard? The shipwreck fisherman, Chris Simmons, did just that on a shipwreck offshore that they paddled to through shark-infested waters as a land-based fishing mecca. And Chris's book has gone through the roof because it's such a unique story. And I guess after the Cigna disappearing, Chris, you could tell that story. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott. How are you going?
Yeah, going well. If you did told the story too early, you'd have every man and his dog on the wreck or falling through the rusty metal and cutting their legs or getting eaten by sharks. So you probably did the right thing in waiting for the Cigna to disappear before you told the story.
Well, that's right. There was no social media back then too, which was a blessing, really, because you wouldn't have been able to, you would have to get in the queue to get out there, I'd say. But there you go.
Gee, you had some great adventures, and we spoke about this when the book was published a while back. It's just been published as an e-book. People can jump on your Facebook site to find the link, The Shipwreck Fisherman, The Cigna, My Story, and it's just a great yarn. And when the surf was on, you'd surf. When the fish were on, you'd fish.
Nobody else basically knew about it. There was a couple of other people fished out there, but only the other idiots like us. and luckily, there wasn't too many, but it was just a special place to go to.
What was it like? I mean, it must have been interesting sleeping on that rusting hulk, and it was quite dangerous too, wasn't it? Because there were so many parts of the infrastructure of the ship that were caving in through corrosion, but it was on quite a list as well. Was there any way to get comfortable on that steel deck?
Well, I tried to sleep one night on it and I couldn't because I kept feeling like I'd be rolling around the place. So I put a hammock in one of the cabins and that was quite good, except for when you forget that you're asleep and you go to stand up and you're in a hammock. Yeah, the deck was a bit unforgiving, but it was awkward. It was cold. It was hot some summer nights, but in the winter it was freezing. But it was like stepping into an amusement ride almost, that you could take different tracks in, and it was just unreal.
Some of those giant mulloway that you landed, you know, what was the fight like from a rusted, jagged, sharp ship, and how did you get them onto the deck? You know, did you wash them up on the bit that was sort of submerged, or how did you go about it? That must have been really tricky to work out how to land those big jewfish.
Well, getting the opportunity to land them was part of the thing as well. We had a gaff. We had to have a long gaff on a long pole. But I remember one night I caught a jewfish, and there was an old davit arm that was sticking out on the side of the wreck, and my line got wrapped around it. And I thought, oh, well, that's it, I'm gone. One of the mates, Mad Mick, he walked out on with the surf coming up around his waist, climbed up on his arm and undid the line, and we ended up getting that big jewy in, and it was fantastic. So all these little things like, you know, catching the bait, catching your own bait to catch the fish with, it was just the full circle. It was great.
Ah, just a great boy's own adventure in the backyard. You've got some amazing photos in this book too of down inside the superstructure and underwater shots of giant schools of Ludric and giant schools of Taylor and you know, the fish on the deck. I mean, it's just extraordinary what a fish attracting device it was, wasn't it? It was just a magnet for fish.
Oh, it was the best unnatural reef you could get because it held the whole food chain there practically. And it was just unreal.
But wild too. I mean, what would happen when a really big sea came up? I mean, waves would flow right through that, wouldn't they?
Not quite, but when you're on board, you think it's going to. But, yeah, getting off again in a big storm is not fun. But, yeah, we go out there one night and it was just too big. And we stopped fishing and all we were listening to was the pounding of the waves against the bulkhead and all of the air being compressed through different chambers coming out in openings, and it would breathe. And it was, you'd have all the sound effects going all night. And in the wintertime, it was okay when it was a calm night, but when it was wild, it really set an atmosphere. It was good.
Did it shudder and rock and roll when the big waves hit it?
I don't think the actual base that was in the sand moved, but the rest of it would vibrate. It got a pretty good smack down a few times, yeah. And eventually, that's what led to its downfall. It eventually it's all gone now. So
yeah, took it back. Yeah. The sea giveth and the sea taketh away. And of course, it was a giant storm that put it there in the first place. Chris Simmons has written a fabulous book, and we featured it a while back when it was first published on The Big Fish, The Shipwreck Fisherman, The Cygna, My Story. And that book has now gone up as an e-book. If you go to Chris's Facebook page, The Shipwreck Fisherman, The Cygna, My Story, you can have a look at some videos and some photos and make a comment there or have a look at the book online. That you know, hissing and popping and banging in a big sea as it surged through the bulkheads and up into the skeleton of the ship. That was just extraordinary. Would you go higher into the superstructure to get away from the sea if it started to come up?
Oh, yeah, there was always a safe point, but you had to get off it sooner or later. And we didn't have the luxury of a helicopter. so sometimes we had to just jump back in and hope for the best and get washed up on the beach, which that did happen a couple of times.
And we told the story last time about you know, taking all the gear out on surfboards and being tracked by the great white sharks that live there permanently. They're in huge numbers, aren't they, those teenage sharks, the ones that are only about 13 foot long.
Yeah, only. They'll only take one of your legs at a time instead of two.
When the jewies were on, how did you know and what did you put out for them?
Well, we used to use live baits and we only had old beach rods with side cast Alvies on them. And they were pretty basic, but they could stand a lot of abuse, which they copped on the Cygna, because your rods would get washed all the time or you drop them and nothing broke on them. They were really good reels, but there was no mechanical advantage as there is on reels like today.
Did you put the Livies out under a bobby cork or something, or just let them go without lead?
We did occasionally. That was through the daytime, but in the nighttime we just had them sunk on the side because you wouldn't have been able to see a balloon and to see if it was going to get washed into the wreck or not. So you'd
tether them under, you'd have a long leader and a big lead or something? Or?
Yes.
And what were the best live baits for the jewfish at the Cygna?
Slimy mackerel.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get many of them. They were like jewfish chocolate, those things. But most of the baits we used were little mullet that were always schooled beside the wreck on the calm side. So we used to use those, and the jewies were fairly partial to those. They enjoyed them.
What about some of the other captures? Tell us about some of the other fish you would catch fishing for jewfish.
Oh, sharks. Unfortunately, we had our share of those. But on the live baits, not much else. But on baits, on smaller baits, with the brim and the tailor, the flathead, it was just unreal. And it wasn't every single time you get it at all, but at different times of the year, different species. And it was just a gift that kept giving. It was great.
It must have been mayhem when the tailor were really ferocious.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes the school would submerge and you just throw a spinner out and let it sink to the bottom and just jig it up and down a few times. And then as soon as somebody was hooked up, bang, everyone would be into them. And they were good fun. Yeah.
Did you ever barbecue a fish on board, or was it just too wet and wild out there to do that?
Yeah, well, you get smoked out for starters because there was some timber on there, but that was full of oil and stuff. And we did carry some wood out there once when we tried the boat a few times, But it was just too much work. So we just kept the fish live till we left, and then we clean them, put them in the backpack, or tow them behind the board and get them home and on ice real quick. So
yeah, and you had a beaut old on the cover shot. You see your beaut old Land Rover with the big mal on the top that got you up there. It is a fair haul up from Stockton too, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it was a few kilometres through bush tracks, and then because from my place I could go through the bush and then onto the beach straight onto the sand. So I had the best access of all, and but it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work to get out. I'm too old to do that now, I reckon, but I'd probably still have a go. But it was a lot of work to just get on the beach, get down there, get your gear out, rig up, catch your fish, clean your fish, then come back again. But it was just great fun.
Good on you, Chris Simmons. Yeah. Great to talk to you again. Wonderful that you've been able to put your book up as an e-book there, and it's just such a unique story. And fishing being the number one recreational pastime, I think people will really enjoy it. Appreciate your recollections again of the shipwrecked fisherman.
Great. Thanks very much, Scott.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
And sharing the water's a very important thing as we all head out for the summer break. And look, the majority of jet ski riders are good people, I must say. I get a little bit carried away with the jet skiers, but most of them are fantastic. But a few do push the buttons a bit. We'll talk about that up next on The Big Fish.
Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
picture this perfection. It's a still, quiet morning on the estuary, not a breath of wind. The glassy water is crystal clear and you glide slowly across the sand flats, seeing the big brim and whiting swim away, the giant flathead lying in wait on the bottom, and you think, you beauty, they're on today. You gently lower the kelleck at the back, gently lower the kelleck at the front, then pick out a lively nipper, put it on your gossamer thin line, 4 pound spider web, and flick it out, set the rod, and wait for that big bite. Everything's beautiful. The magnificent ospreys are gliding overhead on the first thermal of the morning. Just a beautiful sight, that whistling cry to their mate as they look for fish for their youngsters back in the nest in the eyrie. The peep, 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 peep of the beautiful pied oyster catchers as they flit across the oyster leases with their bright red pencil-shaped beaks. Beautiful little birds, always together, always talking to each other. And then in the shallows, the godwits and the eastern curlews bobbing up and down rhythmically as they feed up on the bounty of the mudflats and the sandbanks and the weed beds after their record-breaking flight from Siberia to your estuary. Everything's peaceful, everything's calm, everything's beautiful. And then all of a sudden, the trail bikes of the sea, the rare and endangered jet skiissimus idioticus, out they come to join the wildlife, the predators of the estuary. And for some strange reason that only the jet ski driver could tell you, they come from 10 kilometres away, even though you're the only boat out on the estuary, and keep getting closer and closer until they come charging past at 80 kilometres per hour, close enough to lob a lead into their gob. What is that all about? You've got the whole estuary, and you decide to pick on the poor little fisherman sitting quietly in his boat, trying to be stealthy. What can we do about it? Marine Area Command's Detective Acting Inspector Christine McDonald, welcome to The Big Fish.
Thank you.
When we're anchored up and just having a quiet fish, how close can a jet skier come to you?
Yeah, for jet ski riders, obviously they must comply with safe distances, so which means, for example, you must not be within 30 metres from another vessel, including another jet ski, and you must not be within 60 metres from people in the water, which is also another safe distance that we'll be enforcing this summer period.
Rather than getting into a stoush, what can we do to make sure that they know that we're not going to tolerate this sort of behaviour?
Yeah, obviously the Marine Area Command have introduced Operation Riptide, which is a highly visible mobile policing strategy. So we'll be out on the water across this summer. You'll see an increased number of police on the water this summer. But we're also urging members of the public to be our eyes and ears. And I think the best way to do that in this environment is if they have access to their mobile phone and it's safe to do so, if they're able to film people that are doing the wrong thing on the water and send that through to the Marine Area Command, we'll be able to investigate and hopefully take action.
And maybe put a bit of a profile together too, if the same people seem to be popping up in those videos. It's usually a few bad eggs that spoil it for the rest, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. I'd say that the majority of boaters and jet ski riders do the right thing. But the more that we can identify and respond to bad behaviour on the water, the safer everyone will be.
What is it about summertime and blokes, boats and booze? They're just, they shouldn't go together, but they sadly do. I know the Royal Life Saving Society are trying to educate on keeping alcohol out of our time on the water. Is that something that you can work towards stamping out as well?
Yeah, that's correct. So this summer, the police, particularly the Marine Area Command, with our joint agencies assisting us, will be conducting random breath testing and mobile drug testing. So the limit for alcohol is 0.05, which is exactly the same as it is on the road. And if you're a passenger on a boat or a jet ski, You also have to be mindful of your alcohol intake as well.
The police also have all the same powers as fisheries officers, and a lot of the Marine Command police are fisher folk, so they know their rules. Do you help out in that regard as well? You know, if people are doing, you know, grossly doing the wrong thing, putting traps in where they shouldn't, nets in where they shouldn't, and making sure that they don't fish unsustainably?
Yeah, at the Marine Area Command, we work very closely with fisheries, particularly we find in regional areas as well, abalone poaching down on the south coast. We're involved in covert and overt operations. We also run operations in relation to illegal fishing and offshore as well. For our Operation Riptide, obviously that incorporates inland waterways as well. So we have our RIPs that will deploy as well with our jet skis. And we're looking at targeting a number of inland waterways, Murray River, Lake Macquarie, further up the coast, Tweed Heads. So we'll be out and about this summer, that's for sure.
Thank you so much for joining us on the program. Good luck and safety to all of your people over the summer break. You're out there to look after us, and if everyone shares the water and does the right thing, we'll be a lot happier.
The family were whinging, "Dad, you let yourself go." They hardly ever visit, so how would they know? Because I choose to live in a caravan park. They think I've lost the plot, but they're way off the mark. My waterfront view only costs 200 a week, and old Millard is my mansion. It's cosy and doesn't leak. There's brim at me back door, I catch enough to eat. I go prawning and crabbing up the mangrove creek. The kids shake their heads, they reckon they know best. Dad, you should be in a nursing home. You can't live like this. The Riverside Holiday Park is not their cup of tea. An old Millard and a tinny, that'll do me. They reckon I got no social life, but that's far from true. This filthy Phil and Neb, the happy hour crew. Cold beers under the fig tree, prawns in the ice tub. On Friday we get the courtesy bus to the raffles at the club. They look down their noses, they think I'm trailer trash, because I clean the toilets to make some extra cash. They said, "What if you get sick and need medical attention?" I said, "You can call me an ambulance, it's covered in me pension." The kids shake their heads, they reckon they know best. Dad, you should be in a nursing home. You can't live like this. The Riverside Holiday Park is not their cup of tea. An old Millard and a tinny, that'll do me. And when the time comes, I finally have to go. Just slide me into the river, tie a crab pot of me toes. There'll be no need for sadness, no need to grieve. Just check me next morning, the muddies are on me. The kids shake their heads, they reckon they know best. Dad, you should be in a nursing home. You can't live like this. The Riverside Holiday Park is not their cup of tea. An old Millard and a tinny, that'll do me. An old Millard and a tinny, that'll do me.
Errol Grey coming up on The Big Fish. Stinker and the caravan park at Fingal Bay next to his place is filling up with happy campers. But there's one item that you just have to have. You'll be surprised at what it is. The kids have got to have one. Everyone's got to have one. We'll find out what it is with Stinker coming up on The Big Fish.
On
ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
It's getting exciting, Stinker.
Oh, it is, Scott. It's getting closer and closer. It's a very exciting time of the year.
It's almost that time to pack up everything you can possibly fit in the caravan, trailer or boat and head to the holiday spot.
There must be somewhere, Scott, where there's nobody, because everybody goes to the coast. So somewhere, there's got to be a town out in the bush somewhere where there's nobody. Is that the case?
I don't know. I'd like to find the place, and if we do, don't tell anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, because very few people on the coast go out to the bush for holidays. Everyone sort of heads to the coastline. So there's got to be somewhere where there's no one. But look, yes, it is. It is a great time, and I love to see it. I mean, I've lived in a tourist town, Tweed Heads and Nelson Bay, Fingal Bay, Port Stephens, for a vast majority of my life. So I really respect the tourist trade, but I also really enjoy seeing families packed up to the hilt. They bring everything here but except a camel, you know, and there's surfboards and like you just said.
I like those trailers that have got a cage around them. You see them on the M1 Pacific Motorway and the Princes Highway, and there's everything in there. There's 1,000 surfboards. There's 100 bikes. There's just kayaks, stand-up paddle boards.
That's it.
Got everything. Skateboard. They got just everything.
Yeah, that's why they've got everyday work there, that's for sure. And look, it's a great thing. And our caravan parks here are chock-a-block full, and people have been coming here year after year, as is the case right along the coastline. But people have, their families have their chosen spot, and that's where they go. And for me, as a kid growing up at Tweed Heads, that favourite spot was Iluka. Oh, Iluka. When I was told that we were going to Iluka, I immediately got excited, started jumping up and down, packed the fishing rods, one rod each, you know, one rod, one reel, a little bag of hooks and sinkers, and a creel. We all had creels then.
Wicker creels, wicker. They were woven out of sort of sticks.
They were. I've got one in my lounge room, but I'm having, and you'd sort of wear them on your hip. They'd hang over your shoulder and you'd wear them on the hip.
I reckon they'll come back, you know, because there's so much plastic polluting the ocean. We had the solution back then, didn't we? The wicker creel. And they were waterproof. They floated. They were light. They didn't hold the sand because it sort of fell through the weave of the whatever wicker was. It's willow or something, is it? I'm not. Maybe a listener can let us know what a wicker was.
Well, I'm glad if I know. But like I say, I've still got one. But when I was given one, probably a Christmas present, maybe when I was 8 or 9 or 10 years old, oh, gee, a bike, a watch, and a creel were the most important things in the world.
Well, we had a big square one for the middle of the boat, and then you had little ones you could put over your shoulder. But, the you know, one full of the old corks with the old line wound onto them would sit in the middle of the boat, and it was a square wicker creel, you know, with a lid on it.
All right.
But you never see those. Does anyone make them anymore?
You'll find them in some of those second-hand shops, you know, or antique places. But that's the only place. But I think probably the most important thing that families have got to bring, and that one kid should have each of these, and that's a bucket. Oh, you can't go. You can't go on holidays without a bucket, your own bucket, not a shared bucket. And buckets come in different sizes and different colours. So have a look at your kids and go and select a bucket that reflects the size of your kid. Now, it's also important that you put something in the bucket. It doesn't have to be much, but it gives them some sort of degree of independence, and it gives them some ownership. And, oh, look, and every kid you'll see around here with a bucket, and you're busting to have a look what's inside it, because it holds the strangest of strange things. You know, oh, look, I love this time of the year. But look, seriously, what you need to bring here, if you've got a boat, well, that's great, because half of Port Stephens water, remember. And so, and we've got some reasonable, not brilliant, but reasonable boat launching sites right throughout the port. And the port's massive waterway, massive. You can count Karua and then Tea Gardens on the other side of the port, and then Tillygherry Creek back right around back here to Nelson Bay. It's huge. There's a lot of water and a lot of room. So you're not going to be sort of bumping into each other. There's heaps of room. And once you get on the water, probably the best with the family, of course, and it's safety is the first issue. But you've got to really think, okay, we're on the water. What are we going to catch? You've got to have a plan. That's what you need. Sit down to the family and work out a plan. So this is what we're going to do. Righto, we're going to target crabs. There aren't a great deal of crabs yet, but they'll arrive for Christmas. They love Christmas too. And then, so we want, you can't have a witch's hat in Port Stephens, so don't bring any witch's hats here. But you can have dilly pots and crab traps, and that'll catch you a good feed of crabs. While you've set those crab traps and dilly pots, then you can drift for trumpeter whiting, which are always there, and the kids have a ball catching trumpeter whiting, and there's a heaps of flathead scot. I've had so many reports in the last month of really, really good flathead at the back of the harbour.
Isn't it funny? You're having a great flathead year there. Lake Macquarie's great. I'm hearing from the Illawarra they're really in good numbers, and those nice eating size ones, we've got to let the big ones go, but it seems if flathead and Botany Bay, it just is a good flathead year. I wonder why that is. Everywhere it's a good flathead year.
Well, it's a cyclical thing. You know, you have your good years and your bad years. But flathead are probably the most popular fish. Flathead and whiting are the most popular fish at this time of the year for the family fish. But make sure that your reel spins around. Yeah, because I'm sure that there are some that come here that haven't used it since December last year. And it does tend to be, particularly if there's a bit of salt water in there, that it won't turn. And there's nothing there's nothing more depressing than to finally get everybody at the water's edge and then to find out that the reel will not spin around even once. Or make sure that the boat starts. That's another one. I mean, there's nothing worse, again, if you've got a reel that won't spin and a boat that won't start, you know, that's not a real good start to the holidays. So make sure those things are happening. Get out that squirting gear, you know, that what you squirt with, and get squirting. So to make sure that everything goes around in circles. But some of the best entertainment here, you can take a few. So I have a bit of a sausage sizzle down at Little Beach and watch the antics of those who are trying to start their motor or get it off the trailer or learn to back their trailer. Oh, it's great.
With the pressure on with 100 other people waiting in the queue to get their boat into the water going, look at this idiot.
Yeah, hurry up, mate. Hurry up, mate. You know, we all want to get on the water to some time of day.
That just makes it worse.
It's called ramp rage.
That's right, they do. And Stinker, the Tweed as well. What are your thoughts of the Tweed? Because that's the other place you've spent a bit of time over summer. What happens on Terra Nora and the Tweed and those lovely estuaries that you haunt up north?
Oh, well, it's all whiting and crabs for me up there. Oh, and I really do enjoy it. The grandchildren who we've just come off Broughton Island, well, I'll take them all up there to Tweed. And I've got a boat in the backyard there, a punt. And the punt's what you want because it's only very shallow in the lake system up there. And then you go up there, particularly early in the morning, and there's a change of tide, and you pump some yabbies. There's plenty of yabbies in that system, or nippers, whatever you like to call them. And then you keep them nice and fresh. And I have a pontoon at the back of my parents' home up there, and they dangle off the pontoon so you can keep them alive. And then off you go, and you target the whiting on the change of tide, and you do pretty much the same as I've suggested here, and that's to set a few crab traps, and then you pick them up on your way home. But I also enjoy, and I know you do too, and that is with a hand line, just have a couple of hand lines over the side, and have a slice of some fish or a whiting heads are good, Whiting heads are very good, and that's for the crab comes along and grabs hold of that, and then you scoop them into the boat.
Yeah, it's great fun.
It is good fun. And then have an esky with a slurry in the esky so that you, whenever you catch your whiting and your crabs, you pop them in there. And they're very happy in there. And then they're in good condition for when you get them home. Don't let everything dry out and crawl around in the bottom of the boat. But so inside the harbour, that's what I would suggest here at Port Stephens. Outside the harbour, there are heaps and heaps of little kingfish, which will drive you nuts. But there are also some beautiful snapper being caught, and a lot between 32 and 40, which is sort of 800 grams to maybe nearly 2 kilo. And they're a beautiful fish, Scott. They're a really beautiful table fish. And there's no trouble at all catching them, particularly in the wash. So really it's a boating paradise here over the holidays. But you don't, I mean, the beaches are so, oh, what you'd say, comfortable and inviting. And the best two beaches for fishing is Stockton Beach and Fingal Beach. They're the best two beaches. So if you're planning to come to Port Stephens for your holidays, it's a very wise decision.
I'm just worried that Rob Paxavanis and I, we've been talking up the Lachlan River, Cowra and Parks, and they had the red carpet for his movie about cod fishing in that beautiful river. And there are some good cod and good water still coming out of Wyangla, as you know well. But you do worry sometimes you talk it up too much and you won't be able to get a spot on the Lachlan River. You know, you need to take a ticket. So if there are too many people going that way, it's our fault and we apologise.
Well, I mean, support the businesses in those country towns as well. The baker and the butcher and everybody else. Go to the news agents So if you're thinking about it, get out there and really support them. But look, I've got one little bucket story I must tell you, and I tell it every time at this time of the year. So apologies to those I've told it for the last 10 years in a row. But
a good story's worth retelling, Stinker.
Well, mate, you've heard this and you could probably tell it, but never mind. What happens? This particular time, around this time of the year, I was having a quiet beer with a few mates at the front bar of the Country Club Hotel. Now, for those who know the Country Club Hotel at Shoal Bay, it looks out through the heads and it's just a beautiful. I love if I'm having a beer to have a good view. I like having a good view if I'm having a beer. And there's none better than down there. And in front of this pub is this beautiful big jetty, there'll be a pile on that by Christmas, over Christmas. But this particular day, I was watching this old gent, and he came along and he had a big red bucket. He was a beauty. And he went down onto the water's edge and he sort of filled the red bucket. Then he walked up onto the jetty and he had a folding chair. And he unfolded the chair and he sat on the folding chair beside this bucket that had water. And then he got his little rod out. And I think I saw him put a prawn on it. I'm not real sure, but he put something on the hook. And then he dangled it in the bucket. And I'm thinking, well, you know, this is a bit odd. But he was quite happy. He was happy fishing in the bucket. So it got too much for me. So I said to me mates, I'm going over here to find out about this joker. So I walked across the road and I walked over. And he looked at me and I looked at him. I said, are you catching any, mate? He looked at me in all sincerity and he said, you're the first.
Oh, good on you, mate. Tight lines.
There he's got.
Went fishing last Sunday and I caught a smelt. Put him in the pan and the fire he felt. Of all the smells I ever smelt.
Well?
I never smelt a smelt like that smelt.
As the salmon swam up the river to spawn,
yeah,
he said to himself with a great big yawn,
ho ho,
the next time I come up this way,
I'm gonna make the trip in a Chevrolet. Ho ho.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
And Mitchie, our woman on the ground in Tamworth and the New England Northwest, we've spoken at happier times, Anne, and we will speak again in happier times if we can hang in there. But our friends the fish, they're in dire straits, aren't they? Tell us about the operation to try to rescue some from your Peel River, which, you know, the local clubs that you're involved in have worked so hard to stock, haven't they?
They have indeed, Scott. Yeah, so it's pretty sad all around. Tamworth City itself has gone into an emergency response as far as critical human needs for water. So they've effectively put a block bank across the Peel at Dungowan to ensure that the township itself will have more water. But in doing so, they've stopped all the flow down the river, which is not good for the fish and everything else that lives in the river, you know, the platypus, the bloody turtles, the mussels, everything. So we're just starting to see it now in the last week. Holes are drying down, fish are dying, and we're in the process of just gearing up and getting ready to try and save some of them. We're fortunate enough, we've got Rico out at Narrabri Fish Farm doing a fantastic job out there. And I had a report that he can take up to 500 fish. So he's taking some of our brood stock, so the beautiful big Murray cod, yellow bellies, caddies and silvers he can take out there for us, so that we can try and preserve some of our genetic diversity that we have here in the region.
And what can people do up and down the river? There are many landowners who love their river, love their fish and have worked tirelessly with you. With, you know, so many great things we've spoken about over the years, that mudslinging to put the grasses yeah. on the bank and all that work that's been done for repair and restoration. Now, those people love the fish, don't they, those landowners?
They do. The landowners do. I was actually only talking to a friend yesterday, and he's a landowner. He's got about an 800-metre stretch on the Peel, and, like, he's just devastated watching what's going on, and he rang me, what can we do? So there's a hotline with fisheries where you can report as soon as you see anything, you know, fish even just starting to gasp for air, you know, they're stressed. Let fisheries know so we can get in there with them. So some of the local fishers in local clubs are helping out with DPI fisheries. And, of course, Ausfish is playing a big role in this to get in there and help. But we've got to do it with the permits to have it lined up so that these fish can then go out to the hatcheries like Narrabri and down to Narrandra as well. They're telling me the really good thing is all these fish that are being relocated are being tagged. So there is a chance when things return to normal, whatever the bloody hell that is, some of these big mature fish will actually be taken back to the reach of river from where they were rescued. So we won't only just be keeping them for broodstock, so we'll have fingerlings to put back in the river, but we'll actually be able to put some of the big guys back, you know, some of the apex guys that you need in the river to keep things balanced.
Yeah, the very important work being done. It takes vigilance, though, doesn't it? People will need to be checking the river. I know it's depressing to go down to a dying river, but it's important to keep checking, I would guess.
Well, that's it. You're the eyes and ears. You know what's going on in your patch of the river. You know when something's not right. And as soon as that water quality's, you know, off to you as the landholder or as the regular fisher, or if that's, you know, that's your bit of river that you always go to, you need, you know, to report that back. You know, citizen science in its finest form, really. Our fisheries guys are just stretched to the limit, as you could imagine, because this is not just our valley. It's, you know, right across the state, all up and down the Murray-Darling, this is going on, and people are, you know, wanting to help. So that's where they can report it, let it know, get it in the system. You know, it's no point just putting a post on Facebook and going, you know, this is stuffed, me fish are dying. Put it into the fisheries. Get it on that hotline. Send them the email. Send them the photos. And then they can do something about it. We can't save all the fish. I think people realise that. But we want to do what we can to try and make the best of such a terrible situation.
And Anne, how do they do it? What would be the process if you've got a pool that's drying up on the Peel that has a big cod or a number of big cod and yellow belly in it, or catfish or silver perch? How do they go about then translocating them to keep them alive?
Okay, so my very good friends in Ausfish down on the Macquarie have just done it. They did some out around Warren. So they actually get in there and net the fish out of the water hole and physically get in there and pick them up. And then they've got the special oxygenated tanks sitting there and with as the least amount of stress on the fish as possible. Get them into those tanks and ferry them down to where they've got to go.
So like sort of like tanker trucks,
Float tanker trucks. So the Ozfish guys, very inventive as us fishers are, they got the big 1,000-litre shuttles, IBCs, whatever you want to call them. I think everybody's seen them cruising around. They've insulated them. They've hooked up oxygen tanks to them. And they've worked really well as backup, like, because fisheries have only got a finite amount of big tankers that they can use. But for short trips, these 1,000-litre shuttles are working a treat. So I've just been speaking to my mate Harrow that runs the river repair bus in Dubbo. So we've got one of those shuttles coming up here. So we actually will have a fish taxi for the guys, you know, try and keep them cool and keep the oxygen up to them. And apparently it's working a treat. They're travelling really well in these things. And, yeah, so we're just doing what we can for them.
And then when the water comes, eventually we can take them back to where they lived on the Peel.
On the Peel, and we're going to do some in the Namoi. I think there's actually some lined up for down around Carroll this weekend. I know they've already done some out at Weewaw. And the good news is that all these fish that they're relocating are surviving. So that's a really good thing. They're not turning over out at the hatchery. So that's great.
And how important is it, I know you've got a bit of a science background as well, how important is it to keep that genetic diversity, to have enough fish, you know, in the bank sort of thing to keep that going?
I think it's hugely important. And the thing is, and it was something that was pointed out to me, and it's true, like these mature cod that are in the rivers now still, they've lived through droughts before. So they've got the smarts, they've got the strength in their genetics to be able to know how to survive through tough conditions. You know, they've made it from the little guys. They didn't get eaten when they were little guys. But, you know, they've been able to survive this long. So they're the fish you want to be breeding from for the future, because they've got the wild smarts in them to survive.
And I guess they've also been smart enough to select the spots in the river that are the last to stay wet.
Holes.
Yeah,
exactly.
The last holes and dominate those holes. So taking them back to their territory where they know how to breed and all the rest. That's I mean, this is sort of a bit anecdotal. We're maybe anthropomorphizing a bit, but this is, you know, you could think that that's a good thing to do.
I believe it is. I really do. I mean, it's. I was only talking about it this morning with someone, and they're like, wow, that just seems like such a drastic thing to have to do. And I said, well, that's where we're at. And, you know, this is it. I mean, sort of uncharted territory, uncharted waters. There's never been anything on this sort of scale done before. You know, talk of taking fish out of rivers, putting them back when there is water. It's just so dry right across the basin that, if we don't do something like this, we could actually, you know, lose these wonderful fish out of our rivers forever.
Annie, I'd love to talk to you about the happy times, and we have had a happy chats, you know, when the water was good. You keep
It'll
your chin up.
Again.
I know you love these fish, and the solastalgia, as they call it, our sense of grief that we feel with the loss of the natural environment and our recreation, but we've just all got to hang tough together and keep talking to each other, and these strategies give us something to do anyway, don't they? And Ozfish
are
a great mob, aren't they?
They are. Ozfish are right behind this and just trying to help out any way we can, most definitely. And a lot of that is too, and exactly what you touched on there, Scott. It's not just looking after the fish, we'll look after the fishers as well. And that's really important, you know, looking after your mate and just checking in with them and making sure, how are they doing? Are you okay, mate? You know, what can we do?
Well, you know where I am. If you want to catch a few bream or whiting, if you're coming down the coast, let me know.
Well, I'll have to do that, Scott, because one of my other favourite spots over the coast caught on fire. So, you know, that's been the other tragedy. You know, the eastern seaboard's been on fire.
I know.
So it hasn't even been a relief to get over there.
Can't win. Anyway, we'll make it through. Good to talk to you, Annie.
Okay. Thanks, Scott.
And Mitchie there on the Peel Fish Rescue.
Saturday is a very fine day to do a little work in the yard. But when the sun is shining away, it makes the work too hard.
It makes the work too hard.
Saturday is a very fine day to get my homework done. But when the sun is shining in May, we ought to go have some fun.
So let's go fishing.
We're putting the Gone Fishing sign up on the Big Fish for a couple of weeks. Hope you catch a few. Don't forget, too, if you have any issues at all that might have been stirred up by the worry about the fish and Anne's conversation there, Lifeline is always there, 13 11 14. It's a good resource.
look after yourself.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.